always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Toscano. Another day with communities at risk from severe storms is ahead in the southern U.S. down to the Gulf Coast. CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson.
As you go further north, Jackson, Mississippi, Hattiesburg, those are all places that could be seeing the severe weather threat during the day. For Wednesday, the further east you are, the later your threat. By the time we get to Alabama, it's after dark. But during the day, Mississippi and Louisiana are really under the gun for that severe weather threat.
Hail, widespread flooding, and tornadoes are possible. Researchers are finding there is a link between pregnancy and aging. Here's CBS's Jen Clark.
A new study from Columbia University finds that pregnancy can actually make you age faster. Researchers studied 825 women using a process called DNA methylation, which follows our epigenetic clocks. They found that for each pregnancy, women aged 2 to 3 months faster than they normally would. The study also looked at men who fathered children and did not find the same thing. Jen Clark, CBS News.
A law from 1864 is about to make abortion close to totally banned in Arizona. CBS's Nancy Cordes reports.
It is a dark day in Arizona.
Arizona's Democratic governor begged the legislature to step in after the state's conservative Supreme Court reinstated a Civil War era abortion ban with no exceptions for rape or incest. The author of the 4-2 decision wrote, "Physicians are now on notice that all abortions, except those necessary to save a woman's life, are illegal, with doctors facing a 2 to 5 year mandatory prison sentence."
In Boise, Idaho, 18-year-old Alexander Mercurio has been charged with attempting to provide support to ISIS in his hometown of Coeur d'Alene. Elise Preston is following that for us.
According to court documents, Mercurio had pledged his allegiance to ISIS and his intention to die while killing others, using makeshift flamethrowers, a machete, and other weapons found in his home by the FBI, which says he communicated with other radicalized individuals on his school-issued computer.
The women's NCAA championship game, which was watched by an average of 18.9 million viewers, pulled in 4 million more viewers than the men's title game, beating them for the first time ever. Mistakes on the marble base of the 19-foot bronze statue of L.A. Lakers star Kobe Bryant outside the team's arena have been corrected. Among other errors, the names of former NBA players Jose Calderon and Von Wafer were misspelled in a rendering of the box score from Bryant's 81-point game in January of 2006. The statue was unveiled in February. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Body parts are turning up around Milwaukee County. A human leg was found in a park in Cudahy last week. Another body part was found in Milwaukee a few days later. The family of a missing teenager says it wants answers. Authorities can't confirm a connection, but they have brought in someone for questioning. Republicans like Congressman Brian Stiles say the student loan forgiveness program President Biden pitched in Madison Monday is a desperation move.
There's a reason he's doing it in the most progressive city in the state and targeting students. He's trying to buy votes.
Biden says it would free up millions of Americans burdened by debt and benefit the economy. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers beat the Reds. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers got a 9-5 win tonight in Cincinnati to even that series one game apiece. Game three of the four-game series tomorrow night. NBA, the Bucks beat the Celtics 104-91. Milwaukee jumped out to an early lead and never looked back. But in the third quarter, Giannis Antetokounmpo came up limping and had to leave the game. Doc Rivers.
Team announced he was out with a left soleus / calf strain. Just curious, did he get an Achilles tendon test?
Yeah, they're testing him for the calf right now, which obviously MRI.
Okay, and as far as you know, there's no updates on that. It's just
no, he just left a little while ago.
I asked, how high is the level of concern for Giannis?
That's a good question. High, I would say that. But, you know, Giannis, I think everyone probably feels the same way as I do right now. So we're just going to hope for the best.
That's Bucks head coach Doc Rivers. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A partly cloudy sky here in the overnight. Light southwest winds, upper 30s by sunrise. More clouds on the way for Wednesday with highs reaching the upper 60s. A slight chance of rain coming our way for Wednesday night. A better chance on Thursday. Currently 46 degrees.
Wednesday on the Maggie Dawn Show, I take on Trump lawyer, now disbarred attorney John Eastman. Turns out it was all a big pack of lies.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the third hour of our program. Those of you who listen to our book reports during the breaks, those are mostly just on our nonprofit stations while our for-profit stations are in commercial breaks. I just recorded a new one, Tripped, Nazi Germany, the CIA, and the Dawn of the Psychedelic Age by Norman Ohler. He's the New York Times bestselling author of Blitzed. And he's with us. Norman is a novelist, screenwriter, and journalist based in Berlin, Germany. He's author of this new book, Tripped, Nazi Germany, the CIA, and the Dawn of the Psychedelic Age. Norman, OHLER.DE is his website. And it's Norman OHLER on Twitter. Norman, welcome to the program. What got you started on this book?
Hi, I'm very happy to talk about these ideas that I tried to, you know, research. For me, the book started at home with my family. I had read a white paper of an American startup called Elusis. They claimed that microdosed LSD would be good against Alzheimer's because microdosed LSD would stimulate the very same receptors that Alzheimer degenerates. And I discussed this with my mother, who suffers from Alzheimer at an earlier stage back then when we started, and with my father, who had been a judge in Germany, quite a high judge, actually, not a drug person at all. Actually sent people to prison for drugs. So for him, this was new territory. And he said to me, if LSD might be helpful for diseases like dementia, and also depression could be treated with psychedelic compounds. Why can't I, he asked me, why can't I go to the pharmacy of our small town and just buy it if it's so helpful? So I said, I will research this for you. This will be my new book. And I did find actually very interesting occurrences in the very early history of LSD when the Swiss pharmaceutical company who discovered it was very hopeful to turn it into a medicine. So I research what went wrong with LSD. Why does it have such a bad reputation these days? Why did it become illegal in the first place? And can it actually help us now, or is it dangerous and should be forbidden?
Yeah, it's certainly potent. I have taken LSD multiple times in my life. It's been a lot of years since then, but it's potent stuff, and it's transformational stuff too. What do you talk about Nazi Germany and the CIA? how do these things get into there?
Yeah, this is a curious story, actually. While I was in the archives of Novartis, pharmaceutical company who swallowed Sandoz, the inventors of LSD, I found interesting documents that led from the CEO, the Swiss CEO, Arthur Stoll of Sandoz in the mid-40s to Richard Kuhn, who was the leading Nazi biochemist. Because these two men had actually been friends and they had shared information. And then when Sandoz discovered LSD and they actually had no idea what it was wrong.
We're talking about Albert Hoffman here, right?
Well, Albert Hoffman is the chemist who discovered it and Stoll is his boss. So his boss basically called the shots. what the company would do with it. That was that no one's actually ever examined that CEO, because he's the crucial guy. I mean, he didn't discover LSD, but he had it on his hands, and they actually formed a tripping room within the company in the mid 40s, where employees could go in and take LSD, and no one knew anything about it. And the employees just said the things. I read all the reports, like they were amazed how good they felt. They could think about their life very clearly. They looked outside the window and admired the beauty of the clouds. Like, they were actually tripping, but everyone had a good experience, and people who were a little bit down or had no energy suddenly were revived. And so Sandoz thought that this was a game changer maybe for mental health, because at the time there were no antidepressants, antipsychotics. This all didn't exist. So LSD was like the first medicine that would actually heal people's minds. And he discussed this with Richard Kuhn on the German side, kind of naively. But Richard Kuhn, because they have been friends since the 20s. I mean, it's a Swiss guy and a German guy. They're friends. They're sharing information. So Stoll tells them, we have this powerful thing that works on the mind. We don't know yet how it works and what we could do with this. And Richard Kuhn, who was, you know, working for Nazi Germany, developing nerve gases. And I mean, he was a leading biochemist for Hitler. And one of his jobs was also to think about a so-called truth drug. This was a secret program of the Nazis. Can we find a drug with which we can improve our interrogation technique? Mm-hmm. So Kuhn thought, maybe this is maybe this is it. So the Nazis, the SS, made tests at the concentration camp of Dachau, giving inmates LSD and mescaline, doing human experiments, basically, without telling these inmates, these prisoners, we're giving you something now. They just drank a cup of coffee, but there was LSD or mescaline in it, so they started tripping. And so these experiments fell into the hands of the American military when they liberated Germany and the Dachau concentration camp. Mm-hmm. And the American military got very interested in it, because, you know, if this is a new type of weapon, maybe this LSD, we should maybe use it in the Cold War, which was then starting. So they let the SS experiment be evaluated by a Harvard professor who was an expert in drugs, and he wrote back, yeah, maybe this could be a good weapon. Maybe we could, you know, attack a Soviet battleship, kind of poison, or, you know, infuse their water supply with LSD. They would all be tripping. They couldn't fight anymore. So these were this kind of thinking led then to the CIA developing LSD as a potential weapon. So the dream of Sandoz, the company, to turn it into a medicine was early on blocked by, you know, this, I think, naive communication that the CEO had with a Nazi biochemist. So you can trace that communication all the way then back into the United States.
That's amazing. Back in the 60s, a friend of mine was going to MIT, and he got sucked into the CIA without realizing it, into the CIA LSD experiments, and was given LSD without his consent. And that was not a good experience.
It can't be, you know. It's such a powerful substance. You cannot give it to someone without, you know, telling that person. It's a cruel experiment.
It really was. I think he's still wounded by it. I'm wondering, you mentioned that there was an assertion that LSD could be therapeutic for dementia or Alzheimer's. Has that been followed up? Is that true?
Well, that's what the startup companies worldwide are now trying to investigate and examine. And slowly the laws are softening, and it's easier than like 20 years ago or 10 years ago to make these clinical tests, but it's still not so easy. You have to, you know, fill in a lot of paperwork and to get permission to work with these substances, because they're still controlled substances. That is kind of the catch-22 with the psychedelics, when Nixon proclaimed the war on drugs in the 60s and made also LSD and mushrooms, psilocybin, illegal. From that moment on, it was even illegal to examine whether it is dangerous. Like, they were so dangerous, you couldn't even examine whether that's true. And now, I mean, the findings are pretty clear that psychedelic compounds, especially LSD, enhances so-called neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. Neuroplasticity is the ability of the brain, or the behavior of the brain, you could say, to constantly alter its shape. Basically, the brain is not a rigid thing in our skulls. It's constantly reconnecting, reorganizing knowledge, and LSD kind of stimulates that process. Also, LSD works against neuroinflammation, and neuroinflammation is the chief cause for dementia. So it looks like that these compounds that the government told us are too dangerous for us to use might actually be a brain food or very beneficial. And this is now being examined. And for sure, psychedelic medicines will come onto the market, but it will take another 10, maybe even 20 years. But companies are working on this right now. This is a billion-dollar market, obviously.
Sure. Yeah, we're talking with Norman Ohler. He's the author of a new book, Tripped, Nazi Germany, the CIA, and the Dawn of the Psychedelic Age. You have a chapter, LSD JFK. Tell me about that.
I mean, it's a fact that JFK had a girlfriend, and her name was Mary Pinchot. She was in the White House. She was seen by White House staff smoking weed with the president. There's documents for that. It's also a fact that she, in the spring of 1963, visited Timothy Leary, who had been a professor at Harvard and who was like the LSD guru, basically. Yeah. He thought everyone should take LSD and the world will become better, which... Okay. Well, he gets visited by Pinchot, and Pinchot says to him, I have a very influential friend and he wants to try LSD, and can you give us some? Because it's not so easy to get it, mm-hmm. especially good material, I suppose, at the time. So Leary gave her LSD, but then there's no record that she actually took it with JFK in the White House. Mm-hmm. She had it in the White House with him, but you just pop it in your mouth and you've taken it. Like, no one needs to see you. No one would actually notice. Like, security wouldn't notice if the president was high on LSD. So it's possible that he was on LSD. What is a fact, again, is that a few weeks after this encounter between Pinchot and Leary, when she received the LSD for her influential friend, Kennedy gave his so-called peace